Welcome to Travel Talk Today with your host and founder, fast start to slow travel expert, Sharon Ann Hamilton.
How was Alaska? Tell me.
Alaska was amazing. It's my 50th state. I had been to all 49 others, and I'm sort of a collector of national parks, and they have 8 of them in Alaska. I managed to hit 5 of the 8 because a couple of them are almost unattainable. But I went to Gates of the Arctic National Park, which is north of the Arctic Circle. I went, did the seaplane to fly to Brooks Falls in Katmai National Park to see the bears fish in the waterfall. So yeah, it was pretty amazing.
So Walter Mayer, how long have we known each other?
Probably 15 years, maybe more.
15 years and on and off, connecting and disconnecting and then connecting again. Today, we're talking about travel, and I know this is your passion, too. Has it always been your passion?
It has been. My parents were not big travelers, but, you know, I would see articles and want to see the world. And when I was maybe 10 or 12 years old, one of my Christmas presents for my parents every year at my request was a subscription to National Geographic.
Okay.
And when I finally moved, I had like, you know, literally a ton of National Geographic. But I would read these articles about safaris in Kenya, or which I know you've done some of this stuff, and you just all these beautiful national parks and think, I need to go there. And so, you know, once I was an adult, I don't know about you, but in my adult life, often when I had time, I didn't have the money. And when I had money, I didn't have the time.
I think that's the way of most people, is they don't think they have the money, but they have the time, but they don't think they have the money. But you and I know that there are many ways to travel, and it's not always about the money. It's about the mindset, I guess.
And once I got to the point where I had enough freelance writing assignments that I could write anywhere, San Diego, which I still call home base, that's the address of my driver's license, my stuff is at a friend's house in San Diego, is so expensive that it occurred to me, if I'm just writing books for other people, I could easily rent a place in Portugal or the Canary Islands or Bulgaria cheaper than I could live in San Diego. So why not do that? And when I take my afternoon walk, do it someplace different and exciting and go see a cathedral or a park or things that I've never seen before.
Climb a mountain.
Yes. Yes.
I saw some of your pictures. Now, you have a Facebook, I guess, a journal where you have been talking about not only what you have been experiencing on your travels, but also the people that you meet. How has travel transformed who you, Walter, are on the inside?
It's sort of, I had the suspicion of who I was, but until you spend that much time alone, you don't necessarily solidify that. And like many people, I suffer from imposter syndrome, and I wasn't quite sure what I was capable of. But when you're standing in that Polish train station, no one around you speaks English, the signs aren't in a language you understand, there's only one person who's going to get you out of this dilemma, and that's you. And you realize how resourceful you are and how many things you can do that you never thought you could do. To get to Gates of the Arctic National Park, you actually have to hike about 5 miles through open tundra, through bear and wolf infested land. And while I was out there, I was thinking, if you'd have asked people I went to grade school with or high school with, like, who is the least outdoorsy, who's the least adventuresome person in our class, many of them would have pointed to me. And I thought, how many of them have actually hiked through the tundra, through bear infested woods to try to get to Gates of the Arctic National Park? I have become the person I always suspected on the inside I was. But until you actually go out and do these things, you don't know. And by the way, if anybody wants to follow me, it's facebook.com/walt.meyer is. And during the COVID lockdown, to keep myself sane and entertain my friends, I started writing what I coined the term plog, which is a post that became long enough to become a blog. So I coined the term plog. And every day I would post something about my bizarre or interesting life. And I've just continued that since. And now that the COVID lockdown is over and I can go wherever, once I get back from my adventures, I write up my adventures and post some photos and videos of this is what I did this week. I have gotten so many amazing messages from that. Like the older brother of a friend in college, a guy I met maybe 2 or 3 times 40 some years ago, messaged me one day and said, I started following you because of my sister follows you. And I realized I'm not too old to do these things. So I just signed up for a trans-Canadian rail journey across Canada. I can still do stuff. I can still go out and experience the world. And I love that I am not only sharing this with other people, and several of the people who follow me regularly are kind of shut-ins. They're older people, can't get out. They know they're never going to hike in Denali National Park. And they want to live vicariously through me, which is great. But then also that I'm inspiring people who still can get out and do things to get out and do things.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because a lot of people think, oh, I'm too old to learn, or it's too scary, it's unknown. And when you start to think of the unknown as a game, I think that's the most exciting part. It's unknown, therefore it's a game I can figure out, and you challenge yourself, and you go within and you learn skills or strengths or I step up and step into the question of the moment. And I don't call them problems, but sometimes they are issues. Now, you are able to make a living while you're traveling. How did you break into the freelance writing industry? And what could you tell someone who loves to write and has maybe never done freelance work before?
I would tell them not to try anymore. It is the industry has become so tight. And every time a newspaper or magazine lays off more of its staff, all of those people who just got laid off go, oh, just freelance. But now the magazines and newspapers are shrinking. So there are fewer freelance openings for a lot more writers trying to fill them. So there were years where I could just write enough articles for newspapers, magazines to support myself. Now I am lucky to place two or three or four articles a year.
Okay.
Very difficult to go that route. I have been fortunate in that for the last 20 years now, people have been hiring me to write their books. Yes, I wrote a novel that sold rather well. I published a collection of my blogs, but most of the books I've written have been for other people. And just word of mouth connections, people will call me and say, hey, would you like to write my book? Most of them have been business books, which pays pretty well. Unlike writing your own book, you have to think about, will the royalties eventually trickle in? With books for other people, they pay you up front. So you don't worry about what happens on the back end. But just while I was in Denali National Park, I got a phone call from a friend from college, a guy I hadn't talked to in a few years. And said, my brother-in-law is struggling to write a one-man show he wants to do. I know you wrote a successful one-man play. Could you at least talk to my son-in-law? Do me a favor. Yeah. His son-in-law ended up hiring me to write his play. And it's just out of the blue. I could not have in a million years predicted this would have happened. But there it is. And so it helps to have those kind of connections and those kind of opportunities. And I should just, for the sake of your listeners, that this is not just writing. 2 years ago, 2022, I saw a friend's post on Facebook, a fellow writer, said that he was working in Grand Teton National Park for the summer. He has become a digital nomad as well, took a job in the park for the summer, and said they were desperate for a night desk clerk at the Coulter Bay Cabins there. Anybody interested? I had been to Grand Teton for 3 days the previous year, absolutely fell in love with it, and thought, how else could I spend 4 months in a national park? Yeah. It costs $300 a night to stay in Grand Teton. Yeah. They're going to pay me to be there.
Yes.
And so I took the job. And the same with Denali. I spent this past summer working in Denali National Park and working for the Denali Education Center. And again, how else can you afford to live there when those hotels are charging $500 to $1,000 a night to stay near Denali?
Yes.
I'm getting paid to be there.
And you were there.
There are ways, as you say, ways of traveling that will actually pay you to do it. And a number of the people I worked with in both places were retired from other careers, but were working retail or host at the restaurant or whatever, just to be able to have those experiences. And some of them I know had been doing a different national park for 20 years.
That's wonderful. So sometimes you can go back to where you were, but as explorers and adventurers, we, you and I, don't like to go back to the same places, even though we have fond memories, we make great friends. Sometimes we find our friends in future locations, and that's kind of the fun thing. I think you are a global citizen, and you can comfortably travel anywhere you want, whenever you want. I love that. That's my definition of freedom.
It is. And if you can work anywhere, then yes, why not? And so many people can work remotely now. And I have a friend who still works on New York hours, but lives in Taipei. So he just works in the middle of the night. But that still gives them enough awake time when the world's awake in Taiwan to be able to go out and explore and do things. So why not? While you probably should, because yeah, we're not getting any younger. And nobody is guaranteed that, you know, tomorrow they're not going to start having health problems that will, you know, preclude them from doing a lot of this stuff. I saw that too often in the Rhodes Scholars that I led on hikes in Denali National Park, where the one guy actually said to me, I waited too long to come here. I can't do this.
Yes. Yes. I remember you writing about that, and you had to help him back to safety.
Really. Yes.
I remember a conversation I had with my aunt right after I got married in 2019. My husband and I took a road trip from Washington into San Diego and stopped in Oregon to visit my 93-year-old aunt. Fortunately, we did, because they got a chance to meet each other. But she said, you know what, Sharon Ann, the one thing I do not regret at all is what I have done in the way of travel. And she had those memories of her trips. At 93, she held on to them with a great deal of pleasure. And I wish that maybe we're not going to make it to 93. I don't know. But I just think every evening or whenever the muse strikes you, you can just go back and adventure those things all over again. This is what happened. This is what I did. This is what I felt. This is what I experienced. These are my new friends, and write to them forever across the globe, and you're connected forever. So I love that.
And that's one thing about writing my blogs and all the photos. I could scroll back through Facebook and see those things, or I have the original photos. I have the original writings that even if Facebook, you know, somehow imploded and doesn't exist anymore, I would still have the stories. I would still have the photos. And what you said about friendships is true. I was bopping around Europe last year visiting a guy in Poland who was one of my main hiking buddies from Grand Teton. Visited a young lady in England who was one of my hiking buddies. Stayed for a month in Bulgaria with a young lady who was one of my hiking buddies in Teton. So yes, I now know people all over the world. I've got places to stay in Colombia and Peru and Taiwan and Thailand. If I want to visit, I've got friends everywhere, and it's great. And I just this past week was in Glacier National Park, where one of my best hiking buddies from Teton is working in Glacier this summer. So it's great. And we were quite happy to see each other and catch up on all of our adventures.
That's wonderful. It's like you're creating this web of a big family, because your friends become like your family all over the world. And I think part of me for traveling, one of the things I like to bring my hosts, whoever they are, is this peace of mind. Because sometimes we do house sitting or pet sitting and or home exchanges. And I want my hosts to have a peace of mind as they go about their travels for whatever reason, that they know they have absolute confidence that I will take care of things, that I will manage things exactly the way they would have, that I'm capable to handle emergencies, and they go away happy and they come back rested and refreshed and regenerated. It's a gift to the world. It's very, very exciting.
Right now, I'm in Portland, Oregon, house and cat sitting for friends here. And yes, I will take random pictures of their cat or of the garden that I'm watering and things like that, and just send them to them occasionally. Not that I need to, but just like, hey, the garden's looking good today. Hey, the cat's being, you know, obnoxious today.
Yeah, that's great. So one of the questions that I always have and that our listeners always have is, what do you do if there's something unexpected that happens that I guess you qualify as a challenge? Can you think of a time where you were faced with a challenge, and tell us some of the backstory and tell us what you did and how it worked out?
It's funny. You said you might ask that question. And I thought, wow, if you're going to travel, things are going to go wrong. You know, planes don't show up, trains don't show up, you know, things happen, but you have to roll with it. You just have to expect that it's part of it, expect the unexpected. And what is my sort of back of my mind? What's my plan B for this? You know, I love the line in Tennessee Williams, I've always been dependent on the kindness of strangers, because I have had so many wonderful encounters with strangers because of quote unquote tragedies, you know, bad things. In Glacier National Park, when I was there 2 years ago, I had a blowout. There is this road with just these horrendous potholes, and it's managed to dodge one of them, and the tire just blew. And I have a hybrid, which means the space where my spare should be is taken up by a battery. So I don't have a spare. I have a patch kit. A lot of good that does you when you don't have a sidewall anymore. You know, so it's like, this is not good. I luckily was able to coast off the road to this wide spot in the road that had this beautiful view of the river, this beautiful view of the mountains. There were deer on the other side of the river. And it's like, I could spend all day here. This is kind of nice. I had my tent and sleeping bag and extra food and water in the car, something I do on, you know, remote drives. So it's like, I could spend several days here before I'm really in trouble, because traffic was pretty sparse along the road. And in a few minutes, this guy came by, with his dog, and he stopped. He said, well, I'm going up the mountain where there's no phone signal. I had no phone signal there either. He said, I could go back into town for you. And I said, I don't think that's necessary because it's about an hour and a half back into the nearest phone signal range. I said, somebody will be coming the other way. I'll try to flag them down. He said, I'll just hang out with you for a while. So he hung out with me for like 20 minutes. This other car comes by. This guy asks, you know, if he can help. We told him the situation. He said, oh, okay, I'll call as soon as I get a phone signal. And, you know, took a picture of my license plate and everything and like, okay, well, you know, I'll call this in for you. And then pretty much everybody else stopped. It weren't that many people, but everybody going by stopped. There was this lovely couple on their honeymoon who stopped and gave me a soda, gave me cookies, and just hung out with me for like 20 minutes. This was after the guy with the dog had left, because I was there for probably 3 or 4 hours, because it's an hour and a half down to get a signal. Then it's going to take the tow truck an hour and a half to get up there. It was just like this nice little like impromptu party. People stopping by wanting to just chit chat and everybody all concerned. You sure you got everything? You sure you don't need more water? You sure don't need? And I mean, people would have given me the shirts off their back. I mean, it was just kind of that moment. And here we are, and people would be like talking to me and go, and wow, what a view. Like, we have our own private view here. We have our own private little party here, all thanks to my blowout. And yes, it was an expensive tow, but it was kind of worth it because I had this beautiful moment with all these wonderful people along the way.
That's great. I think at that moment, it's when you feel the most love from total strangers. And that is indescribable and irreplaceable and part of the reason that you go to the next trip.
There are a lot of jerks in this world, let's be honest. But when you have moments like that, every single person going by stopped, except, and I found this interesting, the park rangers, several of them went by without even looking my direction, and the border patrol, because okay. I was up near the Canadian border at that point. And I thought, well, that's interesting. The people whose official function it should be to aid the public aren't doing it, but all of these random citizens just stopping and wanting to help. And, you know, I think getting to a metro stop in London, well, outside of London, I was going to stay near Heathrow at an Airbnb. And the SIM card stopped working. I got a horrible eSIM. I could tell you stories, but it suddenly stopped working. I have no phone signal, and I don't know how to get from there to my Airbnb. And I see this guy in a uniform, and he was a bus driver between, you know, trips waiting at the train station. And I went to him, and I told him what was going on. And he said, here, use my phone. And so he, you know, helped me find where I was going and said, I wouldn't take an Uber or Lyft from here. That's kind of expensive. You take the 37 bus and you go here. And he explained the whole thing. Yeah. You know, and I took a screenshot of his phone so I would have all the instructions. But he was like so concerned and so whatever. And yeah, maybe it's somewhere in his job description he's supposed to help travelers because he's a bus driver. But it was certainly above and beyond the call. It was just a lovely gentleman who wanted to help. And it's like, that's kind of cool. So when I am out places, I always feel the need to pay it forward. So many people have been so nice to me. And I got a free trip to Europe on the Queen Mary. I don't know if you read that blog, but it was crazy.
I missed that.
Due to mistaken identity, I got a trip to Europe on the Queen Mary.
Tell me how that happened.
That meant the Queen Mary, you have to dress for dinner. So I had to bring my tux and my dress shoes, my cummerbund and all that stuff. And so I ended up with this giant suitcase. And almost every metro platform or train station anywhere in Europe, I'd be struggling with my two suitcases. Some strapping young person would come over and say, here, let me help you with that, sir, and just carry it to the top of the stairs. And somebody said to me, weren't you worried they'd run off with it? And I said, not really. Somehow these didn't seem like that kind of people. They were just nice people. And when I got to the Airbnb in Dublin, the elevator wasn't working, and I was on the 7th floor. And this guy who had come down to get his food from the DoorDasher, you know, food delivery guy, said, oh, I'll take that up. And I said, it's the 7th floor. And he goes, oh, don't worry about that. And he just ran up the stairs with my suitcase. And I was like, this is great. But the Queen Mary story, one of the people I had worked with in Grand Teton was a delightful young lady named Brooke Allen. And Brooke is American from Utah, married to a Scottish guy. I don't usually go on LinkedIn. I don't do that kind of business, but I looked on LinkedIn because I was trying to connect with this Portuguese television producer who I wanted to meet up when I was in Lisbon. So I look on LinkedIn, and there is this post from Brooke Allen saying, my cabin mate just canceled on me on the Queen Mary, leaving July 21st out of New York. It's all paid for. It's not refundable. Doesn't cost you a dime. I just don't want to go alone. Anybody want to go to Europe? And it's funny because the friend I was staying with in San Diego said, I thought you were leaving about August 1st. Haven't you booked a flight yet? And I said, no, something tells me I don't need to. And he said, what do you mean you won't need to? And I said, I don't know. Something's going to come up. And like 2 days later, I see this post. So I write LinkedIn, oh, Brooke, this sounds amazing. We'd have such a great time together like we did in Teton. This will be amazing. Yes, yes, yes. Pick, love to go. And I post that. And then I look at the little tiny thumbnail on LinkedIn and it's a guy. It's a man.
Oh.
It's like, wait, what? And I look at his profile and I immediately remembered who this other Brooke Allen was. Back in 2008, my play was performed, the stage play I wrote was performed in New York. And this Wall Street guy named Brooke Allen heard about it and wanted to take it to the next level. He had visions of becoming a Broadway producer and said, maybe we can take this off Broadway. So he and I had talked on the phone maybe 10 or 12 times back in 2008, 2009. I don't remember connecting with him on LinkedIn. Apparently we did. But then he called me one day back then and said, you know, with the stock market crash of 2008, 2009, everything falling apart, he said, big name shows with big name talent and that are not getting any backing. There's no way I can find money for your show. I'm sorry. And I said, I understand, not your fault. You didn't crash the economy. And that was it. I haven't spoken to him since. And that's who it was, a different Brooke Allen. So I sent him a private message and said, Brooke, please ignore that goofy little message. That was meant for a different Brooke Allen. I even sent him her Facebook link to say, I do know another Brooke Allen and this is her. And it made sense to me that she as an American would be going to England to see her husband in Scotland, right? I didn't know she had this kind of money to be traveling with the Queen Mary, but, you know, so I said, you know, please disregard that. And he wrote back right away and said, oh, of course I remember you. And you seem like an interesting guy. Do you want to go to Europe? So I was his cabin mate on the Queen Mary.
Okay.
For free. It meant having to move up my plans by like 10 days. But hey, for a free trip on the Queen Mary, why not? And it meant carrying a tuxedo all over Europe. So,
of course. And how was it?
The Queen Mary, honestly, I don't know if they want to hear this, but it was honestly rather disappointing. You know, I had heard from everybody had been on it, like it is the lap of luxury and your every whim before you can express it is there. You know, whatever you want, they'll do for you. Not at all. The service was not great. Talking to one of the staff, they said that most of their people did not come back after COVID. So they had a very inexperienced new crew. And like one night at dinner, the head waiter is explaining to our waiter, no, the water glass here and the bread plate goes over there. And I'm thinking, shouldn't they have had done this training before there were actually people seated at the table in real diamonds and tuxedos? You know, this is kind of tacky to be training in public. And just little things like that. So it was not the best of. And then there was a huge storm in the Atlantic. So we kept having to go further and further north to avoid that storm, which took us.
That's kind of nerve wracking when you think about the other big ship who went far north. Yeah.
That was the other interesting thing is that every day they would show us on our TVs in our rooms and announce in the daily announcements how close we were getting to the site of the Titanic. And I thought, do I really want to be reminded of the Titanic when I'm on a cruise ship in the North Atlantic? This is kind of. And then it was the Cunard line also, of course, operated the Lusitania. And they had the history of the Cunard line in each of the elevator lobbies up and down the ship. Okay. And they had the stuff about the Lusitania. And it's like, I don't know that I want to be reminded of the Lusitania either while I'm on a cruise ship.
That's definitely nerve-wracking, but you made it and you had a free ticket on the Queen Mary and now you have a story so you can tell for the rest of your life.
Exactly. So it was a once-in-a-lifetime experience. I don't know that I'll ever do the Queen Mary again, unless you're paying for it. If you want to spring for a trip, I'll suffer on the Queen Mary again. But so yeah, it was an interesting experience, a unique way to get to Europe.
Yes, for sure. So, Walt, what would you say to a beginning traveler, somebody who's always dreamed about, they've read the National Geographic, they've watched the documentaries, they were in love with a good year and under the Tuscan sun, and they would love to have experiences like that. And they have a little bit of money and they work remote. They can set up shop to work even more remotely. What would you say to their aspiration?
I would say, first of all, as you have pointed out, it often doesn't take that much money. If you're willing to house sit or pet sit or whatever, you may not even have to pay rent. So you might find gigs like that. And I wish I had discovered earlier how cheap it was to go places. And yeah, don't wait till you've got $4 million in the bank to start, because by then you may be too old. And I know people younger than me who have had health problems that would preclude them from doing the stuff that I've been doing. So yes, don't wait, number one. Number two, I know people who are just like afraid. I don't think I could go, you know, wherever. Yes, you can. And if you're afraid, go someplace easy where English is the language. You know, go to England, go to Australia, and, you know, start with someplace where you can read the signs. It does get a little trickier when you get to Bulgaria and all the signs are in the Cyrillic alphabet. You know, that's a little trickier, but it's not impossible given you have Google Translate. You have all of these things. You know, you have Duolingo. You have all of these ways of navigating. And while I was in Europe this time, and when I was there in 2018, I racked my brain to try to remember how I got around Europe in 1992. We didn't have the internet. We didn't have GPS. We didn't have Google Maps. How did we get everywhere and find which train took us where and all of these things? But now I would say 90 some percent of people under the age of 40 in Europe speak good English. In countries like Germany and the Netherlands, they speak it better than you and I do. So it's not going to be a problem. And the few times that I couldn't, like once in a store in Bulgaria and I couldn't manage to communicate with the clerk, she was like, oh, Marie. And Marie would come over and translate. You know, there's always somebody around who, and as I said, strangers are nice. So don't fear that you can't do it. Do your homework. Have a backup plan. Because I said, sometimes planes don't come. Sometimes trains don't come. Sometimes luggage gets lost. Things happen. But so be ready, you know, to roll with it. And start easy if that's what your fear is. But otherwise, once you're there, you realize how easy it is to get around, especially when you can navigate. And I had been in Europe for about a month when a friend of mine said, I'm coming to Spain. Why don't we meet up in Spain? So, and that's what was great about traveling in Europe is people message you and go, hey, I see you're in Germany. Want to meet in Germany? And so you suddenly are meeting in Germany. But he's made a simple suggestion that made such a difference for me. He said, you're walking around carrying your phone in your hand, looking down at that. That makes you look like a lost tourist. He said, I just wear an earpiece and I put it on voice command. And then nobody knows. I wear a hat, so nobody can see it very well. I've got an earpiece in. They might think I'm listening to music or talking to a friend on the phone. Doesn't matter. But I can listen to instructions without having to be looking at my phone every 2 minutes. It's like, God, what a great idea. I mean, it's dumb little things like that, but it made such a difference.
And sometimes when you look like a tourist, you also look like a target in some
way. Right.
That's a very good suggestion. So I remember one time my husband and I took a train from Greece into the used to be Yugoslavia and got off the train. Nobody spoke a language that we spoke. My husband used to be husband speaks six different languages, but not anything having to do with that language there. So we were using hand gestures, right? We look at the taxi driver and we go like that. And he looks completely blank. What the heck are they saying? Now, what would you think that I'm saying like that? Bring us
we
to
want to go to sleep. Take us to a hotel.
Yeah. And then how about this? Right? And the shrugging like,
yeah,
I don't know what you're saying. And mm-hmm. So sometimes even hand gestures fail. So we finally found a bellboy who spoke a little bit of English. So he took us to a hotel. That was great. But that hotel, they were going to put us on the third floor, but that hotel had only water available in buckets. So we said, no, this is probably not going to work. And he explains to us that his parents have a 3-bedroom house in the neighborhood and that he could rent it to us for half the price of the hotel. And he could be our taxi driver. He drove a Mercedes, our taxi driver for the time that we were there. So we took it.
Mm-hmm.
Clear blue sky. These little adventures happen. It was charming. And he was so grateful for the dollars that he earned from us. We found a shoe selling place in an open market. They were selling Rockports. And my used to be husband loved Rockport shoes. And he noticed that our guide helper had really old crappy shoes. And bought him a pair of new Rockport shoes. The young man cried. He was so touched. That is a memory that goes forever.
Mm-hmm.
But it started from the sign language that didn't work.
And yeah, there's just so many beautiful experiences like that where you just random meetings with people who then, you know, you have these connections and you see that all over the world, even if you don't speak the language, somehow you realize we're all human. We have the same needs. We need to sleep. We need to eat. We need, you know, a safe place to stop. I mean, it just, those are the basics. And a lot of like metro stations and train stations are not very good. A lot of them just have automated ticket machines now. Many of them have an English option. them don't. And even if they do, sometimes the instructions, and this is even like working in Word or whatever, and you look up the instruction, it goes, oh, go to such and such menu. And it's like, well, that's nice. Where is the such and such menu? You're already one step ahead of where I know what to do. But almost every time people would come over and, you know, see me struggling and go, oh, no, you and you this and you do that. And then you put the credit card in and then you press that button and you just want one trip. Then you did. And it was like there were always people around to do that, not the people working there, but just other commuters. And those are great moments when you can have those interactions with people and you just end up learning more about the culture that way. If you're staying in a hotel, how much do you really talk to the desk clerk or whatever? But if you're staying in someone's house, then you talk to them and they say, oh, you really have to see the such and such museum, or you really have to go to this beach, or you really have to do whatever. And they will tell you things that aren't going to be on the top of the list in the guidebooks, yeah, but things that are special to them and the average touristy stuff that everybody gets to see. And being lucky helps a lot, like getting the trip to Europe in the first place. But then my cousin was bopping around Italy, said, you're in Germany. Why don't I come up to Germany? We can go to our ancestral hometown. And so we did to meet. The town is so small, it doesn't have a hotel. So we end up staying 15 kilometers away in Freiburg, Germany. And we go to Wassenweiler, where our great grandfather was born. And we're wandering around the cemetery looking for familiar names. And this guy comes up to us and in perfect English asks us what we are looking for. And we tell him, and he goes, oh, you want family history? Call Ernst Heim. Ernst Heim's kind of the unofficial town historian. Here's his number. Okay. So we call Ernst. He doesn't answer. And he goes, Ernst often doesn't answer the phone, but he always answers the door. Here's his address. Here's how you get there. So we go over to Ernst Heim's house. We ring the bell. I introduce myself as Herr Meines. Herr Meines, ah, come in. And he starts spouting Meyer family history just off the top of his head.
Wow.
And it was just incredible. You know, if we hadn't happened upon this guy in the cemetery, we would never have met Ernst. Ernst managed the two Catholic churches in town for over 30 years. So he still had keys to both of them. Takes us to the church where our great-grandfather was baptized in 1856.
Okay.
Takes us to the older church where our 8th great-grandparents were married in 1628.
Oh, my.
And has the records to back this up. And it's just like spouting history off the top of his head. He knows my family better than I do. And he says, and among like Meyer family history, this part of Germany changed hands so often with France, and there are many, many that cross the Rhine into Germany or into France, go to Colmar. And you'll see the Meyer name on, you know, so many stores, Meyer Bakery, Meyer Leatherworks, Meyer this, Meyer that, all relatives. And he said, and go to the August Bertoldi Museum. August Bertoldi is the guy who built the Statue of Liberty. August Bertoldi's grandmother was a Meyer.
Wow.
August Bertoldi's a distant cousin. It's like, what are the odds? You know, and this guy just knows this off and out of his head. It's like, what are the odds? If we hadn't met this guy in the cemetery, we weren't going to go door to door in Wassenweiler and say, hey, do you happen to know any family history?
That's a wonderful story, Walt. And what I notice is that you're grateful. And I think gratitude multiplies these coincidences,
yes,
or happenings.
And like my cousin wanted to give him money because he spent like 4 hours with us, driving us around and showing us the churches, played the organ. He's so old, you had to pump the bellows. You know, it wasn't electric bellows and all this stuff. And she wanted to give him money. And he's like, no, I didn't take money. And she said, well, do you take donations for the church to restore and upkeep these old churches? And he said, oh, yes. And she said, well, then could I give you money with that understanding? And he said, absolutely, thank you.
Yeah.
So things like that, that you can, you know, and so it turned out to another beautiful moment of, yes, he won't take money personally, but we do want these churches to last so that another generation of Meyers can go visit them and see where their ancestors came from.
Of course. That's wonderful. Wonderful.
Yes, if you are grateful, people will be more helpful. There's a lot of rude tourists. And, you know, I know the Americans in particular have a reputation for being rude. But what do you mean you don't speak English? It's, you know, well, this is France. I don't really have, it's not required that I speak English. But I have that attitude. If I'm going to be spending time in a country, I memorize the phrase for I'm sorry, I don't speak French, or I'm sorry, I don't speak Bulgarian. I acknowledge that I'm on their turf. I expect you to speak English. I should be speaking French because I'm in France, but I don't speak French and I'm not going to learn it because I'm only going to be here for a few days. But at least acknowledge I made the effort to learn some of your language. And most French people do speak English and they're happy to speak it to you if you start out humbly and apologetically.
Yeah, that's true. Anywhere I have ever been in any other country. And of course, you and I are from San Diego and there's a lot of opportunities to speak even just a few phrases in Spanish and it lights people up.
And yeah, I mean, it just to be a people person, it helps to want to meet people and get to know people. So yeah, I had amazing conversations with people on trains and planes. And, you know, what are those other great moments? My high-speed, nonstop train from Northern England to the stop near Heathrow was canceled. And there's just a thing on the board that says, cancel. Nothing to do. So I go to the booth and they're like, oh, you take this train to the... So it's like three trains instead of one. It's going to take me all day instead of, you know, 2 hours, whatever it was. And he gives me this little official looking printout, which I stupidly thought was a ticket. The conductor comes down the aisle and asks for tickets on the first train. And I give him my little slip of paper and he goes, what's this? And I said, this is what they gave me at the information booth at the station. He goes, this isn't a ticket. This is an itinerary. Where's your ticket? And I said, this. And he goes, this is an art line. And I said, no, but that's the one that I got canceled. And I got bumped to this one. He goes, well, that's not my problem. And the lady next to me just lays into him. I had the same problem. And you people need to, and you need, and she just like rips him a new one, buying whatever, and just walks away. I never would have had the guts. And it's not my country to just lay into a rail worker like that. But after he, you know, trundled on down, she said, you just have to know how to talk to these people. Oh my God. I wouldn't have known to do that, but I never had to have a ticket. And then the last leg of that journey, I sat next to this nice young man who was like 18 years old. This is his first time his parents had let him go to a concert in London alone.
Oh, my.
He was all nervous and, you know, going to spend the night in London alone. And his parents, like, he, you know, he's texting with his mother constantly. He was checking up on him. And I told him what happened. And he goes, oh, you know, you get a refund. And I said, what? And he goes, yeah, since you didn't get what you paid for, the high speed rail, here's the website. As soon as I got to my Airbnb that night, I plugged in and I got my full money back. So I got to travel for free and, you know, met some nice people along the way.
Yeah, great. So you were talking earlier about starting easy for people who've never traveled before. And one of the things I teach is people how to use the assets they have, like their home. They don't have to give up everything they are holding onto their nest in order to travel. They can try it out for 3 months and go somewhere close by. They can go to another city that's close by or a park, like a national park, and leave their home behind. Now, you've left everything behind pretty much, except for some mementos that you have and that you cherish that you leave with a friend. What's it like to live without your things, your home?
You know, we're making it sound like this is just all one grand adventure. There are some lonely times, I will be honest, and there are some times that you think about that. Like, you know, a number of people have said to me, I bet it'll feel, you know, as good as travel is, I bet it'll feel good to get home in your own bed. I don't have my own bed. I don't have my own home anymore. You know, I don't have a base, really. Sometimes I do wish, like, you know, you're lying there in a crappy hotel bed with the noise outside and going, I wish I had a nice home bed I could retreat to and just whatever. But everything in life is trade-off. You know, you are spending time with me right now instead of out walking the dog. That was a choice you made. That's, you know, how we operate our lives. Every minute of our lives is a choice. I'm not eating right now. I could be, but I'm spending time with you. You know, those choices we make. And so overall, when we make those choices, yes, I would rather be in Rome than in my own bed, because my own bed, I know me, my own bed would get boring very quickly. And as we get older, we know we're going to be spending far too much time in our own beds. You know, if live long enough, we're going to be in bed a lot. So better to get out and see Rome while you can. And, you know, you said something interesting earlier about, you know, visiting places again. I spent 5 days in Rome last year. You cannot scratch the surface of Rome in 5 days. Okay. Not even close to what there is to see and do there. Same is true of New York. You know, I've been to New York dozens of times. I haven't scratched the surface there. But if I go back to Europe, you have this choice now. Do I go back and try to do more of Rome when I'm not going to complete it anyway? That's impossible. Or do I go to Vienna or Prague or Budapest or one of the other zillion cities in Europe I haven't visited, or go to Taipei or go to Tokyo or Bangkok? You know, there's so many places to see. Yes, Rome was amazing. I'd actually go back to Florence, I think, before I'd go back to Rome. But I've been to Florence. Maybe I should go to Taipei.
I like that. I think that what I've concluded, and I have traveled for a lot of years, and I've traveled leaving my nest behind and then coming back to my nest. I've distributed all of my worldly goods and just driven away from my home on a cross-country trip, which turned out differently than I thought it was. I ended up married and heading off to Europe for a year. And we took off with a carry-on and a backpack, each one of us. And we stayed, interrupted by COVID, but we stayed 330 days. And we ended up paying for 4 nights of lodging because of how I'd organized this before. And this is what I teach now. You can do this. It's like the best thing ever. You just move into somebody's house. You've agreed to, not just anybody's house, you've agreed to it in advance. You know exactly what you're going to do. They may greet you. They may feed you a lovely meal and show you the ropes around their home or their pets. And then they go off for a month or 2 months or 4 months. They trust you of the clear blue sky. Just in June, this is what happened. I wanted to go back east to my father lives and family live in Georgia, and he's 96. So it was time to check in again. And we stayed for a week on James Island in South Carolina. I met the lady, platform that I use, and she said, okay, we have a dog, 3 cats, 5 chickens, and some fish. And it's very close to Charleston, so you'll like it. It's on James Island, so you'll like it. And I said, okay, great. So we agreed to this. And a week before, we'd been in contact, or she gave us a house manual and how everything was to be handled. And I said, okay, confirming we're arriving on a certain day at a certain time. And when will you be leaving? And she said, oh, we'll be gone already. And I'm going, absolute strangers. And you're going to leave your home. And I said, well, how are we going to get in? I'm used to Airbnbs where you have a locked door.
Indeed.
She goes, I'll just leave the back door open for you. So we drive into the neighborhood and we drive up to the wrong address. So I'm walking back through and I know she has an above ground big pool. And I'm walking and I open the door and I walk into the backyard and I see this child's pool and I go, oh, wait a minute. I think we're in the wrong place. Quickly backtrack and hopefully nobody in the house saw me invade their property. And then we go to the right address. We go into the backyard. We go to the back door. It was really unlocked. The dog did not have a fit because it was a very mellow dog. And after it kind of gave us a sniff and we passed the sniff test, we just moved in to the total stranger's house and inhabited their life for a week.
Yeah, it's amazing. And yeah, but even if they had met you, you know, in an hour, are they going to be able to tell you're not the kind of person who would, you know, kill their dogs? You know, recommended listening thing. And I haven't needed to. I mean, I'm doing this now, friends, and it's a way to like get back into the lower 48 and back into the United States. I still have that in the back of my mind. If I go back to Europe, that's not a bad way to go. But you know, as long as writing assignments keep landing in my lap, I'm not opposed to doing those. And I was just chatting the other night with my friend in Poland, who's now got his own place, and said, well, you're welcome to my couch anytime. And my friend in Bulgaria wants me to come back to Bulgaria because we never made it to the one national park there. She wants to really show me. And you know, we do get a reputation as the ugly Americans abroad, you know, and there are ugly Americans abroad. Certainly, I'm sure you've seen bad conduct. I've certainly seen bad conduct by our fellow countrymen. But we are this special place in a lot of people's hearts. I mean, most people know relatives who have emigrated to the United States. And just the idea, you know, the national parks were a very American idea. You know, in Europe, all the beautiful places were owned by the princes and the dukes and those people. Here, with our approach to things, no, Yellowstone should belong to the people of the United States. And now pretty much every country on earth has adopted this model of we should have national parks. We should have places that are open to the public. And so knowing that I'm so into national parks, my friend in Bulgaria, my friend in Poland, they all want me to see their national parks. Like, see what we've done with your idea. And it's kind of cool. And it's a moment you have. I have been following a German pianist on YouTube for over a decade. He was first on German television when he was like 11 years old. He was a child prodigy. I have never seen a pianist with faster hands. While I was in Germany, I saw he was playing a concert in Siegburg, Germany. So I went all the way to Siegburg just to see him play. And the whole show was in German. I don't speak much German. And so the host, the MC, was getting lots of laughs, had this apparently very dry sense of humor, would say something very seriously and then add a little tap at the end, would just crack up the audience. And I was like, I wish I knew what was going on here, but they think he's funny. at the intermission, I was standing in line for a beer at the refreshment stand, and this guy behind me starts talking to me and says, "You're an American." And I said, "Yes." And he goes, "Let me buy your beer. I want to thank you for your music." Because it was all jazz and boogie-woogie and ragtime and American music. Uh-huh. And it made me feel good, like, yeah, that's right. I invented jazz. You can thank me for that. I'm the one who came up with that. It was one Saturday night. I was sitting around on my piano and I came up with jazz. No, yeah. I mean, it was just like this idea, like, as the only American around to thank, he was so enjoying our music that he wanted to buy me a beer to thank me for this American thing. So yes, America does a lot of really cloddy things around the world, but we also do things like national parks and jazz and so many other things that the world, and I don't think as an American, we necessarily appreciate that. You get a lot of jingoism, America. Yeah, we're so great. But do you actually have people, you know, acknowledge why we are great and what we are doing that is so great? And there are some really wonderful things in my country that I came to appreciate. I mean, I never felt as good about being an American and of all places, France. You know, people say the French hate us. No, the people in Normandy in particular are so grateful for D-Day that we were treated like kings. So yes, it's nice to go abroad and learn more about yourself and your country.
That's great. So what I've gathered in our conversation today is, number one, if you have an inkling that you want to travel, don't wait.
Right.
Number two, it's perfectly okay to travel alone and with yourself and grow better with yourself and know yourself and know what you're capable of. You can also travel with your mate, your companion. It's a different way of traveling because you share stories in between you. But also when you travel alone, what I found is you're more open to the outside world and people will engage with you. Whereas if you travel with someone else, you're always almost often talking to each other, which excludes everybody else. So there's a value in traveling alone, a value in traveling with a companion.
And yet there are times I wish I had a companion to help me figure out this situation or somebody else do some of the planning because it was all up to me. I don't know where I'm staying tomorrow. I got to work this out. Nobody else is going to find me a hotel. You're right about like the number of times I've been sitting in a bar or a restaurant and people would engage me because I was alone. If I were there with somebody else, like, I don't want to interrupt this conversation. I wouldn't interrupt a conversation with a couple at the table next to me.
Yes.
But people all over the place have just like struck up a conversation. Oh, where are you from? And then you start and I've ended up joining people for dinner, you know? So yes, traveling alone does have advantages in terms of meeting other people, but it's nice to have somebody to figure things out with now.
Yeah. And the third thing I get is travel is a mindset and you don't have to give up everything you own, but you also don't have to keep everything you own. Mm-hmm. So travel is a mindset and the world is out there waiting for you to come and play. Oh. It's the best fun thing ever. I think it's, I call it the great game of life, ever be younger.
Right.
We're not going to be more fit than we are right now. And we're not going to have the willingness to be adventurous that we can find in ourselves right now. That let our inner child come out to play and be curious. Just be curious and follow our curiosity. So yeah, I love that.
And that inner child thing, I thought about this a lot in Teton, where I would just sit and watch a bear or watch a moose or whatever for hours. When we were kids, we all spent hours on our hands and knees watching an ant trail, you know, just fascinated by ants. What was the last time you actually studied nature that way? And maybe I'm too old to be on my hands and knees looking at ants, but to take the time to really watch a bear for a couple of hours or watch a moose for a couple of hours, it's a privilege. And a beautiful thing, and do it. Don't wait. Yes, absolutely.
So I would love to support you in any way that I can in the work that you have. So if any of our listeners want to bring you on board to help write a book, are you up for it?
It depends on the book and how much money is involved, but I'm open to that. I'm not saying I'm finishing a business book right now that I'm hope will be done in the next month or so. And then, yes, beyond that, I'm open to that. I'm open to sitting gigs around the world. I'm open to all sorts of possibilities because you never know what's just going to land in your lap, like a free trip to Europe on the Queen Mary. If anybody has any of those, I'll take it.
Yeah. Okay. Great. So we'll put your information in the show notes. And thank you so much for the time you spent today. I just have loved our conversation. And I think we could probably talk for hours and hours and hours.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
Ventures.
Well, thank you, Sharon Ann. It's good seeing you.
Thank you for tuning in. To learn more about Fast Start to Slow Travel, visit www.traveltalk.today or email Sharon Ann for questions and updates on upcoming workshops.